Hey there, I'm Dave Kula, Microsoft MVP. I'm also one of the co-founders of the MVP Days Community Roadshow. Our Community Roadshow is based in Western Canada and focuses on bringing some elite content to regional geographies in Western Canada. Now, we're hoping to expand the show in the future, but for right now, our show is just based in Western Canada. Now, stay tuned. We may have some announcements coming up very shortly that will allude to some of the new cities that we'll be coming to. Now in today's video, what we're gonna talk about is a session that I had a chance to co-present with a fellow MVP, a colleague and coworker of mine, Mr. Emil Cabot. Now Emil's a new MVP, actually just got his MVP July 1st of this year. So this is his first round being an MVP, so congratulations to him for sure. And he is an extremely bright individual. And you know, I don't really know that there's too many other people on the planet that know much more about operating system deployments than he does. In our session, what we focused on is advanced Windows deployments. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means pretty much whatever we want. We're MVPs, we can present on anything we want to, right? No, just kidding. What we did is we had a session based on our practical field experience that we had deploying a massive amount of Windows 7 seats during the big wave of Windows XP end of life. Between Emil and myself, over the course of an 18-month period, we touched a little under a million seats of Windows 7 through our customer projects that we went through. And we decided we would build a session around this. And this was what we were actually able to put together. We've got some really cool demos that you're going to see coming up. And this show was actually recorded during our MVP Days 2014 Roadshow in Vancouver. Stay tuned, come back after this short break, and we'll take you straight into our recorded session. Good, awesome, perfect. Well, thank you guys for coming to attend yet another session at the MVP Days Community Roadshow. Before we get started, just a really big shout out to our sponsors. Without them, none of this would be possible. They allowed us to actually put on a free event here in Vancouver, and we'd really like to thank all of them for taking and helping us out by their generous donations for sponsorships. Okay, don't forget everyone, CDN MVP Days, I've seen some fabulous tweets coming through so far. This is how this one's gonna work, is that if we don't take and if we don't build our demos properly, Emil's gonna buy beers this time out of his own pocket. I'm not gonna pay for it. So remember, CDN MVP Days, come up with some cool tweets. I saw the Surface Pro was on display there. Let's really get that social media aggregation going, all right? Okay, so why are you here? You're here for advanced Windows deployment. What exactly does advanced Windows deployment mean? It means pretty much anything we want to talk about. So that's what you guys are here to listen to us present on. We're going to be giving you a discussion today for the next 45 minutes or so on Configuration Manager 2012 R2 and advanced ways of going through and deploying. So we've got some really good session on getting your Windows Core OSs out there, which is awesome. And with me today, I have my really good friend and colleague, Emil Cabot. And he's been, both himself and myself, for about the last 36 months or so, have specialized in advanced Windows deployment projects where we help customers get off of the XP nightmare, getting them up to Windows 7, Windows 8, 8.1. And between the two of us on the enterprise accounts that we've touched, we've probably seen about a million seats of Windows 7 refreshes. So we've got a lot of experience. What we wanted to do is bring the session kind of back as a notes from the field and also show you guys some pretty cool third-party tools and bolt-ons to Configuration Manager that could help with your migrations and your deployments.
Okay, so to help paint this picture, we've taken an organization that have reached the point where they need to do an enterprise-wide workstation refresh. They're currently running a single primary Config Manager 2012 R2 environment. And they've opted to use Branchcast for their software distribution as they didn't want to deploy all these distribution points. When they came up to their workstation refresh, they realized that there was some deficiencies inside of Branchcast, mostly surrounding bare metal imaging that they just couldn't adhere to. They couldn't reach with that infrastructure. So what they need to do is they need to come up with a solution that's still going to accommodate that serverless design and able or grant them the ability to deploy operating systems not only to office personnel but also to telecommuters as well. We need to ensure that their user data is migrated from their new machine to their old one, and we're going to allow the end users to process these task sequences, allow them to initiate their OS migration without ultimately having to contact the help desk.
So one of the things that I forgot to mention is that Emil and I, for about the last year or year and a bit, have been working on a book specifically around advanced Windows deployment. We're done. It's actually in the final stages of technical review, and hopefully it'll be on the street probably within the next 3 weeks or so. We were really hoping to have it here so we could do book signing and stuff like that, but we were a little busy getting ready for the show. And so I just wanted to mention that. And so a lot of what you're going to see is content that's come directly out of the book. The scripts and stuff like that that we're going to show are part of that, but we're making them available to the community. So if you guys go to our blog is www.checkyourlogs.net. You'll see some content up there focused around the book, but we're about 3 weeks from go time. We had about a little under 300 pages or so, and we've come up with some really cool ways to take and manage your configuration manager environment.
So to propose a solution to our fictitious customer, we're still going to utilize System Center 2012 as their management solution as they've already deployed that. We need to determine whether the optimal configuration allows for enhancements that are provided inside a configuration manager, or if we need to go out to some third-party companies to really augment that solution. Again, we need to provide that self-serve portal to the end users so that they can go off and initiate their OS migration at a time that's best for them.
So with what we're going to take and go through inside of there, one of the other goals that we had is this particular customer was really interested in having the enterprise application store look and feel for software distribution. Most users nowadays are familiar with shopping in an app store, either on their mobile device or on their PC. They're ready for it. So what we wanted to do is bring that same type of look and feel to the enterprise software platform game. Instead of just having to have administrators deploy all the software all the time, we wanted to build some automation into that. So this is one of the things that we're going to take and show you as well today in the next 45 minutes.
So this environment, the organization that we're talking about is a fictitious company called Via Monstra. Via Monstra was created by a gentleman named Johan Erwidmark in Sweden. He uses a process called hydration to create these lab environments for us. Hydration is built from the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, so it's completely free. Deploymentresearch.com is Johan's blog site. You can go on there and get hydration scripts to build your own config manager environment. It's a completely pre-built script. Ultimately, all you need to do is provide that script with the source media for the various pieces of software and operating systems.
So if any of you sat my session earlier on the Hyper-V clustering demo where I built the Hyper-V cluster in less than 20 minutes, the back-end environment that I was connecting to was Via Monstra, and we built it using this hydration process. And so you'll see in their scripts to build your domain controllers, your SQL servers, and things like that. So all of those back-end infrastructure components, all that automation that you're looking for is 100% free, and it's available for you guys. Check it out. Once you get it built, it takes about, on a fast laptop like what we have, an hour and a half, and you have a fully provisioned environment. So it's pretty neat to actually take a look at what the finished product is behind these things.
So to take that an extra step further as well, we've got a bunch of scripts that will go in and create these servers for you inside of Hyper-V, create all your networking components. Dave has an awesome script that he's created that'll actually go through and build your config manager server with packages and everything. More on that shortly. Okay, so the lab, as created, and what we're using today is the Advanced Windows Deployment Lab right here. So basically, we have a Config Manager server, domain controller. We've got a depot site, a couple of MDT servers, and some workstations. These were all done via automation, all done via scripts.
Our scripts will even build the virtual machines for you. And all that it is an insertable ISO, and you just choose. Like if you guys saw how I did that earlier today where I just chose what I wanted to deploy, you just see one in there, say DC01 or your Configuration Manager 01 server and stuff like that. Very, very easy and straightforward to use.
Okay, so the first issue that we've came across with this new environment and moving from the branch cache environment was we needed to deploy software out to remote branches. And we needed some active bandwidth management. Using bits to transfer data over the business day just wasn't sufficient for us. So we needed to find a solution that was going to recognize system center traffic and recognize business traffic. Ultimately, no matter what we do, no matter when we deploy these things out, we never want to take down the network. We never want to affect business traffic. IT, this industry is a cost center. We're never going to make a company a dollar. It's a fact of the business. But we need to make sure that the people that do earn our company's money are never affected by what we do on the back end. With our solution, of course, we need to have it highly available so that in case certain points are unavailable, certain locations for content are unavailable, ultimately a task sequence won't fail because content was not available. And then, of course, we want to eliminate the administrative effort of managing distribution points, managing content across the enterprise. So ultimately, what we're going to do to remediate this is utilize a product from 1E that's going to use unused hard disk space on the workstations. And then through broadcasting, we'll actually use peer sharing. So instead of having a server at a site to do a distribution point, when I go to request a piece of software, all I'm going to do is say, hey, does anybody here already have this downloaded? If they do, I'm going to grab it from them across the LAN rather than pull it down over my wide area network.
So one of the things that you can understand is that with this type of design, Emil and I, our solutions that we come up with from our consulting practice, we remove unnecessary Configuration Manager infrastructure. If you use Configuration Manager, how many of you guys use Configuration Manager in here today? We've got a few. You'll understand when I talk about Configuration Manager bloat. And all of a sudden you start with a couple servers, and then all of a sudden you've got 50 servers, and then you've got 100 for all your remote sites, and it kind of becomes a nightmare to manage. Emil and I, we work with customers to peel back that unnecessary infrastructure using this solution, and what we do is we take and we get you down to the minimal amount of servers possible. So for example, customer that all of you would recognize that's a good 1E customer is WestJet. Emil and I, in our design, we have what, two SCCM servers?
Two in their old one, one in their new.
So we've got two in their old world, and we got one SCCM server servicing all of WestJet. And that goes across any of their branch locations that they've got, any remote airports, anything. Their big problem was they couldn't actually put an infrastructure out there because they don't own it. And so they needed a solution that they could take and have that would work in those types of places.
So the first thing that we need to do ultimately when we're deploying operating systems is there's a timeline involved. I like to keep it under an hour. When an end user kicks off that task sequence, that process to reimage their machine, from when they hit that button to when they can go again and start up Word or start up Outlook should take within an hour. Because we've already removed distribution points or don't have any distribution points throughout our infrastructure, when a user goes to download and reinstall the software on their machine, they need to be able to find it. So what we're going to do to make sure that hour stays in place is we need to ensure that the package content has been placed at each subnet, at each location across the enterprise, so that when they go through and go from Windows 7 to Windows 8, those Windows 8 files are right next door. They don't have to go back to the central office to do that.
So in this design that we've got in the lab, we have one single SCCM server. That's it. And so what's been installed on these workstations that we have is a product from 1E called Nomad. and it enables that peer sharing mechanism that we can use. So think of it this way, no more requirement of having distribution points out there in the field anymore. We run one distribution point. You always need a minimum of one, but the rule of thumb is that we should be able to remove about 95% of distribution points out there in the field with this design. Totally simplifies everything that it is that you're gonna do with your configuration manager infrastructure.
So we're just going to kick this task sequence off right here now.
Now we get to watch a progress bar for an hour?
Just a bit. So here we see it starting to download. It's going through the install process. Our task sequence is about to start. There we go. And then right away, the first thing that's going to happen is we're going to go through an action that's called pre-staging. This is a custom action that we've added into Configuration Manager that's provided by 1E. So a very important point there is although we're using a third-party program to do our software distribution, it's all handled with inside Config Manager console. We still have a single pane of glass. It's very easy to transition an administrator from a non-Nomad world to a Nomad-enabled environment.
So to simply put this, if this is the very first client that's downloading the content, it'll go to the distribution point, it'll download it, has an intelligent reverse QoS engine built into it, so it'll even back off if the bandwidth isn't available, download it to that first machine. The second machine to kick off this task sequence will then just pull from the first machine. And once there's more than two machines with content, they're both eligible to become masters on that subnet. So there's only ever one pull across the wire. That's what you have to remember. We cut down the traffic and the hops across the WAN by taking and leveraging this solution.
A perfect use case of this is an oil and gas customer that we have. They've got a bunch of remote drilling sites in the Saudi Arabian desert. Each one of these locations has about eight machines in it. To get a tech to go to that site costs about $20,000 a day because of all the security and everything that goes around with bringing someone to that place, that part of the world. So what we needed to do was find a way where these guys could go from Windows XP to Windows 7 without having to send a tech out to each one of these locations. The problem was is very intermittent connectivity. These guys are running off a satellite link. When they're working, they need to have that satellite link up. So what we were doing is with Nomad, we're actually pre-staging the content down to these locations. It takes a couple, 3 weeks for it to get there because we're running over a slow satellite link. But ultimately, the end user never knows that stuff is happening, that their connection is being used to do something else other than their work. So we have that 3 week prep time, but we know once we started that, okay, now in 3 weeks time, we can go ahead, we can upgrade you guys all to Windows 7, and we don't need to get anybody out there to do it.
And do it 100% zero touch without having to require any site visits out there. We can leverage and integrate stuff like Dart as well so that we can actually see the operating system deployment process going so that we can get our hands on the machines to see what's actually happening there. So it's pretty cool technology, and simply put, it just works. We've got Rob Boardman, who's been nice enough to sit in the back of the room here. And so you can come see him. He's going to be at one of the booths inside of the trade show. And so he can talk to you a little bit more about, you know, what 1E does. And I think they've sold like 20 plus million seats of their stuff. They've been around for like 10, 12 years. This is not new technology. It's very well refined, very well respected. Most of the Fortune 100 companies in the world use it. So it's not something that's really new to the game. All right.
Okay, so now we're on to the self-serve portal. What we needed to do is we needed a solution that tied into Configuration Manager so that when the end user went ahead and requested an application, all the stuff in the background happens automatically. For you guys that are involved in Config Manager, there's actually five or six steps to deploy a piece of software, right? There's the software that needs to be in there. That needs to be deployed to a certain collection, a collection of machines. That machine has to be a member of that collection in order for any of that to work. So the shopping application will tie into Config Manager so that when an end user goes to the portal and requests Acrobat Reader, for example, it will trigger Configuration Manager to do all that stuff in the back end. Typically what would happen is an end user would request this piece of software from the help desk and they would have to go in and create that whole process, make sure that it ended up on the end user's machine, make sure that it got installed. Right, so ultimately you're looking at a 20-30 minute help desk call throughout from beginning to end.
So hold on, wait a minute. You mean such a product like this actually exists?
Absolutely, and it's been out for years. One of the things that shopping does that the application catalog doesn't do, the application catalog is default method inside of Configuration Manager for doing a self-serve portal. But the downside of that is you can't do task sequences. You can't do operating system deployment from there. So although it does empower the end users to go and self-install software, they can't do the big stuff. Not only that, it'll also give you the ability to purchase or rent software. So for example, Acrobat Professional, it's a $600 app. You don't want anybody to just go in and hit the button and get it installed. So what we can have is an approval process so that when I go in and say I want Acrobat Professional, it's going to send an email to Dave. Dave opens it up on his BlackBerry or his Windows phone and says approve or deny. He presses approve. It goes back in, does the same process, right? Deploys that software right to the end user. We can even have it charge back the business unit that I'm associated with. So that whole process, start to finish, does not require help desk interaction. Question?
Perfect. So just to repeat, just because we're taking and we're recording the session, Rob was nice enough to inform us that the provincial government is actually using that self-serve portal right now. So I wasn't aware of that. That's really cool. This portal that you guys are going to see, this Enterprise App Store, literally takes like an hour or 2 hours to install and configure and get apps loaded into it. This is not a huge product or a huge install to use. One of the big keys here is that we need a functional configuration manager environment to work with as a starting point. As long as we have that, this is a sidecar bolt-on to what you'd have for configuration manager. An IIS server, a SQL database, and you're pretty much in business. Now, just so that you guys understand this, Gartner says that the typical help desk call for requesting software is somewhere in the neighborhood of $40-ish and change. And I don't agree with that at all. It's way more than 40 bucks. Almost everybody that I talk to, by the time I want a piece of software, I email a manager, it goes into a provisioning queue, I get the software 2 weeks later, that's a bigger circle than 40 bucks. But you know, the actual technical number from a savings perspective is around 40 bucks per software install is a really safe number. I've seen it as high as in the hundreds of dollars, like $200, $300, $400, because some companies just have a broken process around software requisitioning.
The OS migration process is a sweet spot in any IT guy's mind right now because most of us have just come off the XP migration. One of the problems with rolling out a big mass workstation upgrade like that is scheduling, right? You go to a business unit and say, okay, we need to upgrade everybody in the next 2 weeks. All of a sudden, oh, I got this that needs to be done. I have this deadline. I can't be upgraded today. Now what happened, what was supposed to be 2 weeks has taken 6 months. So one of the things that what we do now is put that forward, pay that forward right to the end user and say, okay, you have this quarter to get updated. You schedule it whenever you want, right? We love to see people scheduling this thing at 4 o'clock on a Friday so that it's all done for when they come in Monday morning because nothing never, never, never goes wrong, right? It's always great. Monday morning, they're going to come in and open up their Outlook.
So we did this on a project, one of my last Windows 7 projects. Our goal was to have 65% of the users for the Windows deployment. It was about a 25,000 seat organization. And our goal was about 65% self-serve scheduled through the interface that Emil is going to show you here. And what that did is you can't even imagine the burden that took off of the PMO. All of their schedules and calendars and babysitting and all of that stuff that they had to do, we empowered the end users to now go select what they wanted to. And so not only did we allow them to select, we controlled the calendar. Statutory holiday hit. What we did is shut down deployments during the statutory holiday. We grayed out that day in the calendar. We realized that our service desk could only ingest about 200 upgrades maximum per day. We capped the limit at 125 so that we would have a reasonable number for the service desk to deal with. Wouldn't this tool be awesome, Emil, if we opened this up to all of our users and they all clicked upgrade at the same time and now there's no support staff left to fix any of the issues that we had, right? There's a lot more back-end engineering that goes into the sequence to make it zero touch. This is just a front-end skin so that your end users can actually see what's going on. So before you actually schedule that Emil, would you be kind enough to just give us a quick tour around the portal just to show us what it looks like?
Absolutely. So this is the shopping interface. It's fully customizable, fully brandable for your organization. Of course, we've left in the 1E stuff here that can be changed if needed. Here up on the top, we have banners. These are designed to bring a certain application or a certain workflow right to the end user. They're gonna see this as soon as they drop in, right? You're going through your Office 2013 upgrade, you'll put the banner up there for Office 2013. We've had organizations that use the banners for pre-upgrade materials. So the Office upgrade is very important. It's very big for a lot of people. So what they have to do is they have to go through and watch the video before they can even upgrade. Helps reduce a lot of help desk calls down the road.
So I see a product in their Adobe Reader, and I think for Adobe Reader, we have a very simple workflow in behind that. Because it's a free application, we're not actually going to require that email approval chain to happen. So this would be in the category of like an auto-install piece of software. So if Emil clicks on request there, it's very simple and intuitive for the end user because in a lot of cases, I don't care about the free software. I just want to take the burden off the service desk. Why do I want to even have to have them deal with the free piece of software? Let the users have it if they want it. Doesn't matter. If I reimage their machine, go back to the portal and put it back on there themselves, right? It's very simple, very straightforward, very intuitive. In the same way that if you went out and you bought a new device from Future Shop or Staples or Best Buy or whatever it is, and you go to the Microsoft Store, you can just request all your applications, hit install, no big deal. Users don't mind that interface. They're trained to do it now. This was a little tougher for users to accept probably 5 years ago when they're just starting to get into that mode. Now all of them expect to have to go shop in something like this. So did you request that piece of software there, Emil?
I didn't. No.
Okay. So if he did, he would just hit request and done. All the back-end work in Configuration Manager is done. It would create a collection, it would drop the machine in the collection, and it would create the deployment for that machine. Then it would run a machine policy refresh on that workstation, giving the end user the impression that their software is instantly being delivered to them. It would just say downloading software. Very, very streamlined process.
So okay. This is all you see right here. It's just been requested. Now what's going on in the back end is exactly what Dave said. It's going back in, it's creating the collections, it's deploying the software. When it's all done, it's actually going to send a note to the machine, say, hey, it's all ready now, check in and grab it.
So let's look at something a little bit more advanced here, Emil. Let's go to our, why don't we go to request our Windows 7 upgrade. I'm ready, I'm an end user. And, you know, I'm not really good at, you know, working with forms and stuff like that. So I want something that's just a few screens to help prompt me along to do my upgrade. So what I would do as an end user is what? Just open this application portal. I'd see the banner, click on it, and then that's kind of where we start off here, right?
Right. So now we click next. We have one option. We're going to Windows 8.1.
If you had multiple images, you could have multiple images show up in there. So if you wanted to give them a choice of 64 or 32, if you want to give them a choice of Windows 7, Windows 8, you can prompt that with different task sequences there. Controllable via access control list, so you can choose what people can see inside of that screen.
What's this screen all about, Dave?
So this is an interesting one, and it's blank right now because Emil and I haven't fully configured our lab environment yet. But what we can do is we can put some intelligence behind your imaging solution. So for example, I can take and I can use some of 1E's products to build something called an application mapping table. I can actually look at the applications that were installed on your old machine, saying, oh, you had a copy of Adobe Professional 6 on your XP machine, and you had a copy of Office 2003, and you had a copy of WinZip. What I can do is I can build mapping tables to say, hey, if you find Adobe version 6 and we detect that it's actually been used sometime in the last 30 days, then I'm going to put the new version of Adobe Professional onto your machine. I can actually control how that software comes down. Normally in Configuration Manager, how this works is it's a static mapping rule that every machine that was found with Adobe 6 would automatically go up to the next rule. 1E took this to the next level and they put usage information in there as well so that if you haven't used the application on your machine in within the last 30, 60, 90 days, what they'll do is they'll build separate rule set based on that saying, whoa, hold on, you haven't even launched this application in the last 90 days? too bad, so sad. I'm not bringing that back down to your brand new Windows 8.1 device. So what we find is we get a license compliance and true up on automatically as we go through the refresh cycle on these machines, because just because they had requested it 10 years ago doesn't necessarily mean that they need it today. So we can actually build that intelligence right into the imaging process. That is very, very powerful. You have to think about that for a second for what that'll do for your deployments. Because now all their old software, not only did I bring it back, I could have upgraded it to the new version, and I could have left out the software that hadn't been getting used. So now I don't have to go uninstall software on all these freshly imaged machines after they're all said and done.
Okay, so now we get to the magic scheduling tab. This is where we can say, I want this to happen on Friday, or we're going to do it right now. Next. I confirm that I have backed up my system. Again, all of this is fully brandable. I confirm that I comply with the company's policy that all of my data must be stored on the network drives and not on my desktop or in my deleted items.
No, I put mine in the recycle bin.
And then we hit finish and away we go. And now you see it's scheduled for immediate software deployment. And that takes a couple minutes.
So if Emil goes back to the configuration manager server, Emil, can you go back and just show them what happened in behind the scenes? Just kind of show them a little bit of the secret sauce here. So what you're looking at here is you're looking at a series of collections that have been created here. These have automatically been created by the Enterprise Application Store, the One eShopping portal. And so what we can see inside of here is that we've got a series of deployments. Now, they don't really show as logical for what you guys would know as like Microsoft Adobe and things like that, Adobe or Microsoft or things like that. These are the actual reference IDs inside of SCCM. So that number that you're looking at there, that would equate to some piece of software. The utility already knows what it is. But what you need to understand is that the process of taking these machines and dropping them into these collections is normally a manual process for SCCM administrators. They normally have to intervene to do something, or they have a third-party tool or a plugin or a front end that they built to help them with this. Shopping takes care of all of that. Once the user requests it, the automation happens behind the scenes. As long as that application was in an approval state, it's going to get dropped in there. Likewise, if you went to go take and you went to go uninstall software, it would remove the machine from the install collection and it would place it into an uninstall collection and then run the uninstaller against it. Very, very cool.
Okay, so for the migration of user information, we needed to still have a highly available solution, but it needed to be server-free. One of the other problems with using branch cache as your software deployment mechanism is it can't hold state migration data. Configuration Manager needs a state migration point for that, and it can't do that on a branch cache appliance. But we needed a solution that was still going to use the USMT process, because our company has taken months to build that configuration for state migration to tell what a user will be allowed to migrate from their old computer to their new one, whether their MP3s or their videos or so on and so forth gets migrated over. Because it's using the native USMT, encryption and all the secure requesting, all that stuff that happens, works as well. Essentially, from a 1E perspective, the file is the file is the file. So whether it was encrypted or not, it's still able to manage it.
So just to clarify, for those of you that haven't done a lot of work with Windows deployment, user state migration is how we take all of the old files off of the old machine. So any of the Word documents stored locally, PowerPoints, MP3s if you wanted them. And what we do is we capture those into a .mig file, and then we need somewhere to store it. So just to clarify this process and this problem. The biggest problem with this is the amount of user data that we have to deal with. Typically, you need to have like a NAS solution, or you need to have a lot of just raw data, raw drive space to deal with this. And normally, it involves shipping out hardware out to those remote locations in order to do refreshes. Or you have to have a pre-configured server out there that you're burning a lot of disk space on at the same time.
So here is our... Where did that go? Here we go.
And so what OneE does with their agent-based solution, the same way that they can distribute software from machine to machine, we can find available disk space on other machines that are localized on that subnet. We can leverage that disk space, we can create a folder there, and we can encrypt that MIG file right on that other workstation. We can perform the OS refresh, and then we can pull the data back down from that source workstation.
So here's the process right now as it kicks off. This is still another task sequence. So here we're going through right now when we're polling on the subnet. We're saying, hey, I've got 10 gigs of data that I need to back up before I move to my new machine. Does anybody have 10 gigs out there of space that you can use, that I can use? A couple of people are going to reply and say, yeah, we've got space. It says, okay, machine one, I'm going to put all my stuff there. It creates a local account on that machine, encrypts the password, and then starts to transfer the file over. With that password encryption now, if I was to go in and create another computer with the exact same name as mine, I can't go and pull that file back, right? I don't have those credentials. Those credentials are never made available to me, so there's no way I can get around it. Now, one of the problems with using a workstation to back up this migration data is we don't have the capabilities of a server, right? We don't have highly available or redundant power supplies. We don't have RAID array inside of our workstations. I could be copying to a laptop, right? If I get through this process, complete my state migration so that I've copied all of my data and put it on our laptop over here, now I've gone through and formatted my hard drive, I've reinstalled Windows, now I go back to look for that file again, but Joe's taken his laptop home.
I really like golfing, so I just decided to leave early on the Friday. Uh-oh, that's not good for your CIO's data.
No, so now what's going to happen is ultimately that task sequence is going to fail, right? The CIO is going to come in Monday morning, expect to have all of his stuff there, and although he has applications, none of his files are there. His Outlook configuration is not there, right? The everything. So.
Show of hands, how many of you think that would equate to a successful Windows 7 migration process? Yeah, that would probably fall into the CLM phase where, you know, we'd probably be hunting for a new job at that point in time. So we had to come up with a better way of doing this.
Okay, so now we've completed that. Now we're doing a step for high availability. So now what's happening is the machine is going out, not the machine that I'm imaging, but the machine that I've already copied it to. It's saying, hey, I need somebody else out there that's got another 10 gigs of space. We've configured this so that we need to have another backup, at least one more backup. So it's now going to transfer that file to a second machine. I've chosen the option to let my task sequence keep going. We can say that I want to pause my deployment. I want to wait until that file has been copied to two more machines before I format my machine, before I format my operating system.
It's a good thing Emil and I are SCCM consultants. We can help you. We can help you with that problem. All right. Yes?
There's no option to, let's say, limit the machines in response to your query?
Most certainly.
So
yes.
So the question was, is there a way to take and is there a way to limit the target machines that would be chosen as part of that query? And the answer is yes, absolutely. So we can tweak it so that, let's say, CIO machines don't ever participate in part of that election process. They can always get data, but they'll never actually have stuff stored on their machines. We can also give higher preferences to desktops versus laptops versus servers, so on and so forth. All of which is configurable, for sure, 100%. That's a fantastic question.
My second machine was off.
That's a fantastic question. I'll let you answer that.
Okay.
But the question was, can we take and can we not just leverage hard links? So what's our policy around hard linking, Emil?
If we can, most certainly. What hard linking is, for those that don't know, during the deployment process, we'll copy all the stuff that we want to get back on our machine, and we'll put it to a protected part of the hard drive so that when we wipe that machine, that data still stays there. Ultimately, what that means for us is a lot less transfer over the network, a lot faster deployment. Most certainly, that's the way we want to do it. However, there's two instances where we can't do that. One is in a replace scenario. So if I'm not just going from Windows XP to Windows 7, but I'm also going from my old computer to my new one, right? So the process of copying that data from one machine to the other, you need an intermediary point for that. So that's one reason. The other reason is with full disk encryption. A lot of companies that we've seen over the last couple of years were going from some legacy disk encryption process to BitLocker. There was no way to disable that full disk encryption during deployment. So ultimately, you had two options. You can spend a week to decrypt that drive first, or you just F-disk the hard drive and consider it a bare metal. So ultimately, the second is the choice that most companies have went with because it's a lot faster.
So you could consider this a solution to get around whole drive encryption, because in a lot of cases we're pressured by the business to do the upgrades faster than what the decryption time will allow. So for example, they say 2 weeks to get this branch office done. I add up on my lovely stopwatch. I need 4 months of time to decrypt all those drives. This becomes a viable alternative. This is always a secondary choice for us though. So this is only if hard linking doesn't apply, we have a solution to help out at those other locations. Really good question, though. Thank you. Yes? So another really good question about the data that's stored on another user's workstation and the security surrounding that data that's on that other user's machine, and having the ability to get into, for example, the CIO's data that might be stored there. The data's encrypted, so they can't get into it. So that's how 1E has gotten around that. So they can see a file there, can't do anything with it.
Okay, so bare metal. The next problem that we come across with not having a distribution point across our enterprise, especially with Config Manager 2012, the Pixie service point, or what it used to be called, is now built into the distribution point. You can't put a Pixie boot point off of your Config Manager environment and have it integrated fully. You still have the opportunity to use Windows Deployment Services, so on and so forth, but you're back to having that server requirement. So we needed to find a way to provide Pixie imaging utilizing the workstations that we had.
And so what 1E has done is, in that same product suite for Nomad, they have a product called Pixie Everywhere, which is another agent that can live on a workstation. And what it'll do is it'll proxy those Pixie requests back to the SCCM database for you, and it will allow you to have a configuration without even turning on the Pixie service point inside of SCCM, allowing this to run out of those branch locations. So we still have a requirement never to ship hardware to any of these locations. We want to be able to do refresh imaging. We want to be able to deal with USMT data. And we want to be able to Pixie boot these machines in a bare metal scenario where they might just get machines drop shipped out to a location. And so we can achieve this all without having to ship a single piece of new hardware out to those locations. We just leverage workstations that are already there in order to do this. And so what Emil is working on demoing here is he's creating a brand new virtual machine on that particular subnet where he's got Pixie Everywhere running, and he's just going to boot up this machine and just show the Pixie service request that's going to actually be served by one of his workstations that he's got running on that respective VLAN that he's got set up in the lab here. Hopefully you put it on the right VLAN.
That hasn't happened before. What are you talking about?
So it takes a second for it to actually respond, but the process is pretty streamlined. Hopefully your machine will actually respond. So it's nice because when you think about these solutions, and what we ended up writing about inside of our book is we wanted to write about not just the everyday day-to-day Config Manager pieces. We wanted to write about the things that kind of filled that 20% void. Normally when I look at a piece of software from Microsoft, I go by an 80-20 rule. Microsoft will give you 80% of the functionality out of box, which is fine for most people. That additional 20% has always been serviced by third-party vendors, ISVs, solution providers, and partners. And so this is inside of that last 20%. And this just fills a bunch of voids that, you know, Configuration Manager natively won't fill. So that's okay, Emil. We'll just trust you. We'll believe that it's working. So what we'll do is we've got a couple minutes left, and so we can open up the forum to some more Q&A. It's going to be a lunch break here in a couple minutes. So we've got a couple more minutes for any questions that you guys might have. So you guys can fire away. Had some good questions so far. By the way, with this technology, do you want to know what the record that 1E set was? they deployed over 30,000 desktops in a single month to one client in the States, large telco. It's actually a published case study right up on their website. It's Verizon. 30,000 desktops in a single month without shipping any hardware anywhere. What's that? Yeah, was it, that's not what it was, 1,500 a night? Okay, yeah. So Rob was saying that another client was doing 1,500 desktops a night. Okay, one of the other small pieces here that that we haven't mentioned is that when you build task sequences, there's a certain percentage of failure rate that you go through when you're doing Windows deployments. Would you guys agree with us? Would you say that there's a potential that a hard drive might die? Would you say that there's a potential that a task sequence might fail if this laptop that Emil has is not plugged into like electricity? It's not running on battery. It's not plugged in. Do you think that would be a good idea? Probably be a good idea to bomb out that task sequence if he isn't plugged in, if he isn't jacked in. What if he's trying to connect over Wi-Fi? So what Oney has done is they've come up with a set of prescriptive pre-flight checks. And those pre-flight checks, what they do is they'll take and they'll go through at the beginning of your sequence and purposely bomb the task sequence if it fails at any point in time. And it's very prescriptive, and it's part of their consulting services team that's come up with that logic. As a result, one of the customers that the consulting services team from Oney worked with, a large medical organization, they achieved nearly 100% success ratio on their OSD refreshes. Guys, anybody that's in this space knows that that is nearly unheard of. You're always going to have a certain percentage of failure. But what they did is they failed the machines before they ever blasted the OS off of them. So they said, whoa, that thing was detecting hardware errors. Whoa, that thing was having a USB stick plugged into it, so bomb it. No, that thing wasn't on power. So you go through a prescriptive set of pre-flights like that, and then what happens is you get your success ratio up much, much higher. That means less service desk visits. That means happier customer. That means happier CIO. That means that Emil and I get paid much faster, which is a very good thing, right? And so that's the type of stuff that you have to look at in a long-term big picture surrounding your Windows deployments. It's everything that's inside of that, you know, that 20% gap that Microsoft isn't just going to natively give you. They'll give you a way to get your operating system out there, but they're not going to take and necessarily give you all the tips and tricks from the field from doing all these millions of seats of deployments.
When you spend 6-8 months building your deployment methodology, your deployment solution, your task sequence, whatever you want to call it, you've got that pretty good. Once you start deploying that out, you come across failures. They're pretty much going to be one-off at this point, right? But a one-off deployment to a workstation is not necessarily going to be a one-off. You may see that 1-2% of the time. In an organization with 5,000 or more people, that could be a big effect on your help desk. Right, so every one of these errors that happens is a good opportunity to make your sequence that much better. Why did this one fail? Oh, it failed because there were bad blocks on the hard drive and it wasn't able to format properly. Okay, well, can we get that? Can we check that before we even start? Right, so if it's 1-2%, that's 1-2% that we save.
I just want to jump into your config man server. So we have just like 1 or 2 minutes left here. What I'd like to show you is a script that's going to be made available to you guys via our blog, checkyourlogs.net, www.checkyourlogs.net. When we wrote the book, what we wanted to do is have anybody that was following the book be able to duplicate the environment that we had. So what we did is we built a PowerShell script, and it took, that probably took us, 2 months to perfect. We touched almost every single component inside a config manager that somebody would need to get themselves started. For example, it's not that hard to deploy a configuration manager and have a vanilla console with nothing in it. It's going to have no pieces of software to deploy. It's going to have no pre-built collections. It's not going to have any of the things that really make it look and feel like production. So I wrote a PowerShell script that does 100% of that for you. It'll take and import in, like, I don't know, probably 10 packages that can be used for deployments. It'll take in, it'll create collections. It creates the deployments. It imports the machines. It creates the boundaries. It does all of those things that you would typically see inside of a normal configuration manager deployment. And we are making that script available to the community. It's very, very powerful. And so I hope that you guys enjoy that. How many lines of PowerShell did we have in there by the end of it?
339.
So about 339 lines of code. This can be run on any single one of Johann's deployment hydration kits. So if you had deployed with Johann's hydration kit, this mod works inside of there. You just have to run it. You don't have to do anything else. We're using that same environment that we had for the book. All right. So that's a really nice little nugget for you guys for that deployment piece. All right. And we're gonna make that's gonna be available on the blog. It's also referenced as part of our book as well. And I think with that we can probably wrap it up. So take it to the last couple slides there. So remember, everyone, CDN MVP days. Get your favorite tweets in. Remember, tweets like Emil and Dave's session rocked, changed my life. I don't know, you know, what I would do without these guys. You know, that kind of stuff might hit the selection committee. I'm not going to lie to you. Not going to lie. All right? All right. Oh, sorry. Is this being recorded? Oh, okay. No, I mean, we can't be bribed, right? Okay, so the other thing is the evaluation. So if you can just go back to the evaluation slide there. It's cdnmvpdays-bc. If you guys can please be so kind as to fill those out. Marcos's company has generously donated some prizes that we'll be giving away at the end of the day. Other pieces of housekeeping, prize draws are going to happen after the last session. And so if you want to win some of the cool prizes, you have to be in attendance to win. For the afternoon sessions that are coming up, we've got some fantastic speakers lined up for you. We've got some great vendor sessions. And I think it's lunchtime. So thank you guys very much.